Hello and welcome to another episode of SBCC Vaquero Voices, a podcast highlighting the unique voices that comprise our campus culture and how we're all working together to serve our students and the community at large. As usual, I'm joined by my co-host, Dekeel Hill, and today we're honored to welcome Jana Garnett from DSPS to the show. Jana, welcome.
Thank you so much. I feel very privileged that you've invited me to your third episode, so thank you very much.
Yes, we're happy to have you.
Yes, definitely happy to have you here.
Because we know how important DSPS is to our campus and the services you provide to our students. I know the students that you serve absolutely appreciate what you do. So for folks that might not be as familiar with what you do, give us a little rundown of DSPS and what it does. First of all, DSPS is Disability Services and Programs for Students.
Yes, thank you for spelling that out, so to speak. It's an overused acronym, so yes. So we are the designated department by the college to determine reasonable accommodations for students with verified disabilities. And I know that's a mouthful, but essentially the federal law requires that every college have such a program so that students have equal access to instruction. And that's under the Americans with Disabilities Act and Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act. So that's the bureaucratic side of things, but we're basically a high touch program. We work very closely with students that are comfortable self-disclosing a disability. So as you know, college is quite different than the K-12 system. And in order to get services in college, you have to be has to be voluntary, and it has to be based on self-disclosure. And those can be barriers in and of themselves. But we serve anywhere from 10 to 15% of the credit campus at any given time. I think you wanted me to talk a little bit about some of the challenges of going remote. Is that correct?
Yeah, because we kick off news and events, and in terms of news and events for your department, I think you're just constantly... something's just constantly coming up. There's not like specific events you have to tailor around. It's just that yours is more like a constant flow. So mm-hmm. just kind of how your operations have changed, or how you're adjusting, or how things have to kind of adjust. I mean, you talk about barriers to going to school. Now you have even barriers to reaching out to these students that were looking to you in the first place. So in terms of folks being able to just come into your door and ask for help, that's not as available as it was before. So I'm sure a lot of things have changed.
Absolutely. Thank you for being sensitive to that. I have to admit, it was really frightening at first. You know, it was just, as people say, you know, no one really signed up for this, right? And we're all in it together. I know that's overused, but it's true. And I think I'd want to start first by just thanking my team. It takes a team. It takes a village. The FRC, the Faculty Resource Center, has really worked hard. IT, Hong, you've done a lot in terms of accessibility. So everyone's working really well together to make this possible. But I mentioned we're a high touch program. And so I think that was what made it most challenging to convert to remote services. I'm happy to say that we've really transitioned well. And we're still offering disability counseling, and we're doing that via phone or Zoom, whatever the student prefers. We're still finding students eligible for services on a daily basis. We have students applying and having an interactive meeting with a disability counselor to be found eligible. We're working hard to give our students the tools that they need to communicate with their instructors about what accommodations they're approved for. And it's done in a very confidential fashion. And in addition to that, we've been able to continue offering what we call strategies tutors. So we don't have discipline-specific tutors. Our funding doesn't allow for that, but we have tutors that we specially train. And so we're still able to offer those services remotely. We still have an alternate media specialist that's providing audiobooks for our students, and that's being done through email and phone. And also, we're able to provide American Sign Language, ASL interpreting, and real-time captioning when it's appropriate for a student as an accommodation. So we're still really able to deliver, you know, most, if not all, of our services. Of course, I think we all worry about what we don't know, right? Like, I don't know who's not finding us or who doesn't know that we're still there. And that's really the key, is making sure we're advertising. This helps, you know, marketing and making sure people know we're still doing what we do.
Yeah, that was one of the questions I had in terms of how folks find you, primarily in terms of, if you know that, because is it more something where they know about DSPS as an acronym or as a department on campus, or is it something where they get word of mouth from other students, or just kind of browsing around, like, you know, the student center, and they see something and they ask what's up?
I think fortunately we have a very educated population. And I think, you know, so many of our students that are coming in from our local high schools or outside of the area, they've probably already been served. And so they know through their case management system that they will have the same. We work very closely with our local schools, and we were able to do a lot of that before COVID-19 and before the shutdown. So those students already are connected. And then, you know, students that are maybe non-traditional, older, or just now finding out about their disability or their medical condition, they're finding out from the community that these services are available. And we do everything we can to jump on to any sort of communication that the college is putting out there on the website. So I'm probably missing something, but that's generally it.
Great. I had one quick question as well. You had mentioned about how students have to self-disclose. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you can actually just speak a little bit on the challenges of students doing that in terms of some of the barriers that are created because students aren't comfortable with that. Mm-hmm. And then how do you, or if you can also maybe just give a little bit of advice on how to navigate that space for certain students who may have learning disabilities, or they feel like they have learning disabilities, but they're either shy or bashful or, you know.
Well, I think, Akhil, you probably just identified a barrier that I hadn't even thought about yet. So thank you. And I can now be proactive. In the past, when we were face-to-face, we spent a lot of time going into classrooms invited by instructors to really talk about our program and to really normalize it. And honestly, every time I did a presentation of that type, I would get at least two or three students from that one class that came to DSPS. Yeah. And so I think what I'm gonna need to do is make sure that our instructors know that we can still do that remotely. So you just identified a blind spot for me, and I will act on that later today. Because we can still do that very effectively, just entering a class, you know, a classroom, a Zoom meeting and present. But, you know, I think there's constant work around this topic. And the reason for that is, first of all, students don't really always understand what it means to have a disability, what the definition of that is. And when you know the definition, it becomes much broader and it incorporates so many more people. And then when you add in the idea of temporary accommodations or temporary disabilities, when you like have a medical condition, you break a leg, skiing or skateboarding, those are all under that umbrella of disability. So, you know, it's a physical or mental impairment that impacts a major life activity. So when I go to classrooms and I speak, I talk about, well, what the heck are major life activities? And I try to get the students to give those answers, and it really helps them open up their mind in terms of what it means to be disabled. Walking, breathing, eating, reading, going to school, those are all major life activities. And if there's something that's a barrier to that, you're probably going to qualify for services, whether it's a learning disability, you know, and we serve mostly students with invisible disabilities, right? And that's key. We use that term a lot. Students with medical conditions, a large number of students with mental health conditions, psychological disabilities, autism, right? ADHD is significant. And then you throw in the students with learning disabilities, as well as hearing impaired, vision impaired, and mobility impaired. So it's a very large group of people, and it touches all of our lives. We all know somebody that would fit that definition and be provided services.
Yeah. So not only are you very high touch, as you say, but you also have to cover such a broad kind of spectrum of right. student that is coming in for service. So in terms of covering all those bases, it's got to be just, it's just, and I mean, I have the utmost respect for the work you do and the department you run, just because it runs the gamut. And in these times where you don't have that extra kind of level of contact to reach out, yeah, you really have to not just expand what you've already been doing, which is Herculean, but then add that extra complexity layer on top of it of continuing to kind of meet the standards that you've set for yourself, you know, for yourselves to kind of provide that level of service. And it's pretty incredible.
Yeah. I would definitely echo that same sentiment. I always enjoy walking into DSPS. For those of you who don't know, it's located in the Student Service Building. It's the entrance right that's facing the parking lot on your right-hand side when you walk in. And the staff there is amazing. Special shout out to Christian. He's one of my good friends. But everyone's super cordial, real respectful, super knowledgeable. So it's one of my favorite places to step into. I don't go there often, but when I do, I always leave feeling better than when I came in.
Oh, thank you. That's nice to hear. And, you know, I have to say, I feel so lucky, and I'm not just giving lip service. You know, my job, our job in our office is so stimulating and interesting because it's gray area. I say to the team, you know, there are no absolutes. There's no yeses or nos. It's all based on the data that you're given and looking at it through a particular lens to make sure that what we do is reasonable. And when we deny something, we have to be able to demonstrate a deliberative process as how we arrived at that denial. And frankly, we have students coming in every day with new diagnoses we've never heard of, and we have to work really quickly on the fly to figure out what does that mean as a student in a classroom? How does that impact learning? So it's a lot of fun, and we're learning every day.
Yeah, it is nice that, you know, because I know when I went to school, which wasn't that long ago, but it just seems like things weren't as kind of available. I mean, I'm sure there were services there. I mean, the laws have been what they have been for quite a while now, but it just didn't seem as accessible in a lot of ways where welcoming isn't the word, but I just didn't know where to go. I didn't know where to start. I mean, you know, it just was one of those things where it just seemed, I knew that they had services on campus, but I kind of never knew how to kind of get that first exposure interaction with. And here I'm just walking around SBCC, you know, when we were walking around SBCC, just, I mean, there were just flyers. There were little nuggets here and there where I can pull that picture a lot easier, like around midterms and finals, you have the test taking flyers out, you know, for if you have any kind of consideration, come contact us. Like there, I feel like maybe it's just here at SBCC specifically, but in general, I feel like there has been kind of, that people have been stepping up in that regard to kind of reach out to students and get them the help they need.
Yeah, I think, you know, we can thank the civil rights movement. I mean, we just celebrated the 30-year anniversary of ADA, and people understand that it's a right, you know, and it really helps because they come in knowing what they need and what they're entitled to, and it helps. It gets people in the door, and I appreciate it. So, yay, ADA.
Yeah, I also was thinking a little bit on the lines too, how, I mean, I'm a lot older than, I don't know about a lot older. Let me just take that back. I am older. I am older than Han. And I remember just some of the stigmas that came with that, where I feel now it's what we've done, or what your crew has done a great job at, is normalizing it and making it, people feel welcome, where when, you know, when I was growing up, it was that's, you know, you didn't want to let anyone know that you were suffering or you had problems and you couldn't focus or whatever the situation may be. You internalize that. And I think this is really such a great asset to the college, where it's just, you know, just normalizing it. And for me, I've been at the college for about 17 years. And one of the first people that kind of touched me that worked in DSPS was Henry Reed.
Oh, yes.
And he was so moving in a lot of ways. And I just wanted to, you know, I can't bring up and talk about DSPS at Santa Barbara City College and not mention his name. So just great job at normalizing what people are going through on the days in, the days out within your department, Jenna.
thank you bringing up Henry. He was, I'm grateful I really got to know him right before I came on board, and what a role model and an inspiration. Could get very emotional about that very quickly, but students still come in asking for Henry, and that says a lot, you know, and then we have to break the news, and that's really challenging, but his legacy lives on. I'll tell you right now, look at what you just said.
Yeah.
Thanks.
And even in terms of stigma of disabilities, culturally, as a Chinese kid growing up, I mean, it was always grin and bear it, you know, suck it up, grin and bear it. Don't talk about anything that's going on with you. Just suck it up, persevere. But that ends up manifesting a lot of internalized trauma down the line, you know? So I feel like I'm hoping the Chinese parents are better with that today. But, you know, just for me, even as a slightly younger person, slightly younger than Akil.
Don't brag.
That was all definitely there too. So it was one of those things where being able to kind of just find someone that you can have a conversation with and just talk about what's going on and then see where you go from there. That's a big step for a lot of people. And I feel like that's a nice service as well. So I guess quickly, best way for folks to get in touch with you now in terms of if they have any questions or comments or anything?
On it, yes. We're answering our phones right now, 10 to 3, Monday through Thursday, and Friday, I'm embarrassed to say I think it's 10 to 1, but don't quote me on that. It's on our website. But you can call. We answer the phones. If we don't answer the phone, you'll get a call back within a very short time period. We also have DSPS help at sbcc.edu. We're checking that throughout the day constantly and responding to any type of question or inquiry. So we are getting back to students immediately. Also just emailing any one of the counselors that's listed on the website is perfectly fine too. We'll check the email and get right back at you. That's it.
So once again, that's DSPS help at sbcc.edu or sbcc.edu/DSPS. And yeah.
I can give you our main number if you want. It's 805-730-4164. That's our direct line, and that will be answered.
And it's always nice to call a number and get someone answering on the other end.
Makes a huge difference. It took us a little while to get that in place, but we're there now, and we're glad the phone is ringing.
Excellent.
Great. I had one other last question before we move on to the next segment, and that is, how did you find yourself in this line of work, and what it kind of means to you?
Wow, loaded question, Akil. you know, you no kind pressure, of go, sure. Yeah, you go through life, and fortunately for me, I ended up with a career that I definitely was not necessarily conscious of or considering as a child. But I can do some reverse engineering and sort of figure it out. I grew up in a household of 4 kids, a single mom, twin brother, and 2 sisters. And one of my sisters had some very significant mental health and other types of disabilities. So I grew up in a house that, for lack of a better word, was at times very tumultuous and chaotic. And it definitely informed me and wired me a certain way. And honestly, not in any negative way, but all positive, because it really gave me a perspective and a sensitivity that you can't learn in school or you can't buy. Whereas I really saw people as people and recognizing that we're all wired differently and that mental health and disability is a part of diversity. It doesn't scare me. I am just very comfortable around differences because that's the word we still use. And I just had an inclination. And so it just kind of unfolded in that way that I got my teaching credential. And then I thought, oh my gosh, I can't just teach in a general classroom. I need to really work with students with disabilities and make a difference. And here I am.
That's great. Mm-hmm. Sounds like your profession chose you.
You know, thank you for summing that up. I could have said that in one sentence. That's absolutely true. Mm-hmm. Absolutely true.
And there is a lot to be said for like early like growing up experiences that kind of inform our lives later on that we're not aware of at the time. Like not all of us have this spark of inspiration and that just drives us forever. A lot of it is just little nuggets you pick up here and there growing up. And then you come back to it and you're like, oh yeah, I really did enjoy this when I was younger. I totally forgot about it. You know? So, so there are both paths there. And it's good that as long as you hang on to those meaningful kind of morsels of knowledge and really kind of cherish them, then they'll come back and they'll come back around for sure. So there's definitely something to be said for that.
I have wonderful memories of my mom bringing community to our household. We were the hub of the community because she wanted my sister to be included, and it worked. It worked for everybody. Yeah.
Yeah. My house was the opposite, where my mom didn't want anybody coming over. If any of my friends came over, she looked at them up and down, like they're probably going to rob us. You don't want them coming around anymore. So, but that actually informed me as well, because I would go out to friends' houses and go to other places and hang out and do so that kind of, I found community in other ways by hanging out at people's houses. I mean, that's how I found out about weekend kickbacks and barbecues, was going to friends' houses and they were doing that. Whereas my mom, I mean, I didn't even barbecue my house until I was like probably like 28, 29 or something. I had to bring like a portable Weber because we don't have a barbecue, you know, like, so it was, So it's always those experiences. You never know how they'll manifest later on in life. But then, you know, when you look back on it, no matter what happens, there are ways to kind of extract positive aspects from really any situation. Like me growing up poor in East LA with really strict parents. But, you know, I had two sisters that were really, really kind of kept me on the right path. And then I also learned a lot about kind of like pulling myself up from my bootstraps and being resourceful. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that has kind of fed me well later on in life as well, as I've come to like – sell out and live the affluent life in Santa Barbara.
Well, the funny thing is Han used to work with my mother and at the public library. And, you know, my mom was like the same way. It was like, I hardly ever had friends over. And she was always like, boy, go outside and play. Or like, if she would see me like laying around the house too long, she's like, man, you need to go outside. So kudos to mom for making me an extrovert, like, because I probably would have been a lot different if she wasn't always kicking me out of the house, you know.
Right on.
I can't imagine her not wanting people at the house. She's so sociable, you know. Like you.
Yeah, I know. That's interesting. Yeah.
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 Thank you for that, Jana. That will be a new ongoing segment of what brought you to SBCC and what brought you to Santa Barbara. So did you grow up around here, or did you grow up?
Well, honestly, I think if I tell you where I grew up, you'll understand why I ended up here. I grew up in Hawaii. And I remember starting to get ready to apply to colleges, and my cousin was visiting from San Francisco, and he said, you got to apply to UCSB. And it's just like here. And I went, okay. And back then it was a lot easier to get in. And I applied to one school and I got into UCSB. And you know what? Once you move to Santa Barbara, that's it. I mean, I moved away from this town for, how many years? Just a handful of years, three or so. And I had to come back. So this is my new Hawaii.
Yeah, I went to Cal Poly and got in as an engineering major. And I think back about that now, like I said, it hasn't been that long. But if I try to apply today, they would just laugh at my application, just throw it out the window. You know, like there's no extracurriculars, reasonable SATs, reasonable GPA, but nothing exceptional at all. And like, yeah, so I got lucky for sure.
Somehow I spoke pidgin and it still got me in.
All right. Moving on to our next section, our food and any memorable meals eaten recently section. Anybody want to start? Akil?
I wish I had something super elegant to discuss here. I think I'm going to keep it basic, but sometimes I think we've already talked about sometimes basic food is the hardest food to actually cook. But I live in Carp, and so I stopped at Padera Grill. Mm-hmm. And, you know, most people that are locals in the area, they know exactly where that's at. A lot of people come to that area just because of the beach. But I stopped in there two nights ago, and I ordered it was a tuna melt. And man, that thing was like the crunchy bread, the melted cheese, just that was, that really stood out. I was like, after I just took the first bite, that sound of that to the bread, you guys know what I'm talking about.
Oh yeah.
That crunch, and it hit the spot. So if you're up in the Santa Barbara area, or even if you're, you live locally, it's definitely worth checking out. I was looking at what other people were ordering. The tater tots looked amazing. I guess they're also known for their quesadillas. My daughter was all fired up for that. And the shakes look good. I believe it's the owner, the same owner as the Habit. And so the food was really on par. And I was also, it's so interesting now in light of the whole COVID thing, you know, when you go into restaurants, I think by default, you automatically look to see how the setup is. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, okay, are people, you know, 6 feet apart? Or is there markers on the ground? And I think all that stuff matters now, you know, and things that that will make you actually go into the eating experience. I'll say that, right? Because you realize, okay, they're doing a good job at following the rules, the food, you know, the experience is good. And so I'm just mindful of those things when I walk in. But yeah, that's where I ate at. If you're in town, make a trip out there, support local business. The Habit is a local business, started out actually in Goleta. Mm-hmm. And that place, that one is still there. It's always interesting when you travel and you see them like in places like that you would never think that they would be, you know? So that's my meal.
Yeah, because the Habit in Goleta has the secret menu items. They still have the chili, where you can get a chili on fries or chili on burgers and stuff. And they have the hot dog.
Yep.
And they split the hot dog in the middle before they put it on the flat top, so it kind of gets grilled on the other side.
They butterfly it.
And the pastrami too, but the pastrami is the one in Santa Barbara as well, I believe. But yeah, so I still go to that one in Goleta specifically for the chili and the hot dog.
But, yep.
Wow. I didn't know that. I didn't know about that special menu.
Well, yeah, I guess it's because that's what they served when they started. So they kept it there, but then when they went and franchised out. But then if you go to the other Habits, they have have you ever had the fried chicken sandwich at the other Habits? That thing is pretty good.
I have had that. I agree. It's good.
Yeah, see, so I wish they would bring that over here.
Jenna, what it is Han is so much younger than us that he's part of the generation that's all about the secret menu. When we were growing up, there was no such – you just saw what you saw. You ate what you ate. There's nothing like, where's the secret menu?
I am not about this. I am not all about the secret menu, but I will definitely like learn to appreciate it. Because it doesn't make sense to me from a business standpoint why you would have a secret menu, because you buy the ingredients to use them. So if you have a secret menu, you're not like, you know, some of the Chinese restaurants around here have the Chinese menu. And it's like, those are your most exotic ingredients. They're going to be like sitting in the back rotting if you don't serve them. So you should tell everybody you have them. Like if you have bitter melon in your walk-in fridge, that bitter melon's not going to last forever. Please tell people you have bitter melon. You know, like it's not some exotic thing where it's, you know, like that's, so I'm an old soul too. So that's probably what.
So when I come over to your house after COVID, I'm going to ask you what you have on your secret menu.
Invite me.
Yeah.
My pantry is an open book. Whatever's there, you take it. You can have it. I'm not trying to conserve or be – yeah, but I mean, I appreciate it. It's a nice little like Easter egg, so to speak. And I will say, I'll also say about the Padaro Beach Grill, if as someone with a young child, that is a great place for kids. Like they're not – every restaurant is kid-friendly. I mean, they all are, but they aren't. You know, you don't want to take your kids to certain restaurants, and I have no qualms about taking them there. Like there's a big sand pit. There's plenty of space to run around. There's other kids running around, so I don't feel – you know, like I'm like doing something crazy. So yeah, I do like that spot a lot. Yeah. I do wish there was some kind of beach access, because you look out the fence and you see the beach literally like 10 feet away. And
yeah.
I'm like, oh, man. But those are small quibbles. It's a great place.
Yeah, the tables are far apart too. They did a great job. They moved some tables around. And so yeah, it's definitely a spot to still go. And if you're just trying to feel like you want to get outside the house and you've been cooped up for a while, but and you want to eat out, that definitely, and you have kids, that's definitely the spot.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to piggyback on Akhil's answer about, you know, food and I'm not the best guest for this conversation. I actually am really spoiled. I'm married to a certified chef, so he does all the cooking, and I'm really lucky. And it's really hard to go out at right now when you're not able to sit inside and have that experience. So we eat a lot at home, but honestly, I have simple taste. And when he makes a homemade burger, I'm as happy as
can be. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Happy as can be. And the only thing we've really been doing out, and I love it, is Lily's Tacos. That's our go-to.
Oh, probably yeah.
A minimum of once a week. We go to Colita. We love it. It's great food. It's consistently good, you know, and fast and inexpensive.
I haven't been to the one in Goleta yet. I forgot that they were there. But yeah, they opened in the now Target Plaza. It used to be the Kmart Plaza. That's right.
Exactly.
Yeah. So can we talk burger nuances also for a second? I mean, sure. Are you medium rare, medium, you know, like do you have a preference there?
It's got to be pretty medium.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's definitely a little war between my husband and myself. You know, he likes a lot of red and I don't. So He knows how to make it, and makes me very happy. I'm very lucky.
I'm a shredded lettuce person, and then you know, so that's why I like the habit a lot, because they do shredded lettuce. In-N-Out I do love, but the leaf lettuce is not as, you know,
not the same.
I'm a butter lettuce guy.
Oh,
she's trying to take it up notches on us, huh? She's trying to throw the avocado in there on us.
Oh no, that's a nice touch. Even with the Happy Game, that avocado on there. Sometimes I'll go no mayo with avocado, but then when I get both, I truly feel like a sellout, because I'm like, this is the true bourgeoisie existence. Mayo and avocado on a sandwich.
On the secret menu.
Oh no, at the other Habits they call it what, the Santa Barbara burger or something? It's like avocado. So that is kind of, you know, like that's a pseudo secret menu item that, you know, exists. So
I'm like my palate has changed a little bit. I grew up in my home, everything had to be well done. It was like, don't give me any pink, definitely don't give me any blood. But so I kind of moved as I've gotten older to maybe like a medium, mm-hmm. but in most black homes, it's everything is well done. You're not trying to go anything that is showing blood or pink. It's not done if it's pink. That's how I grew up, and I got that from my father, who was always like, he wanted it cooked.
That works for me.
Oh yeah, my dad, when we went to the first time, we took him to like a quote unquote fancy steakhouse. Steak well done and wanted A1, and they looked at him like he was like, he hurt somebody, and I was like, no, like, yeah, we don't have A1, but you know, that's what you grew up on. We grew up going to Sizzler, Denny's, you know, like that's it.
Yeah, that was a special night out.
Oh yeah, Sizzler was special for me. The first time I saw All You Can Eat,
it
just felt like I'd arrived. I was like, this is the American dream that they were telling me about. Like, this is awesome.
You got the toast? Did you get the toast?
I can go back. Oh no, the cheese toast.
Oh
yeah, and especially the restaurants in town. The Sizzler in town here with that tree in the back. I mean, the one in Goleta that had the old tree up top. Oh yeah, it's that place.
I remember I had. That's the same thing. I mean, Sizzler was like you're going to a nice sit down dinner, you know, but as I got older, I realized I went back and I'm like, man, these shrimp are just all bread. There's no shrimp. It's all breaded.
Especially when you start buying your own ingredients and you like imagine what the little shrimp look like and you see it in a bag and you're like, oh my goodness, this is barely like, I can't imagine what this looks like swimming or anything, you know? Because you see like these shell, especially in Santa Barbara, home of the spot prawns are like exquisite, you know, like, and you look at these little half pink guys already cooked in the bag and you're like, what is going on here? Yeah.
It reminded me of like, you know, when you're little and you're in elementary school and every, like your desk, you thought everything was big. And then when you got a little bit older, you went back to the elementary school and you're like, how did I fit in that desk? Like, it was like that same kind of like metaphor where it was like, it looked so big when you're little, but then when you got older and you start to realize things, you're like, wait a minute, you know, I was duped.
Yeah, no, and as a kid, I love fried food. I love the breading. And then as you get older and you eat more of it, you realize how many places use that breading to mask the inferiority of the ingredient, you know, like whereas the spot prawn is like, barely like kisses some hot water, then it's on your plate or something like that, you know, whereas other places, like the thing is like caked in breading and just fried to death. And then like, oh, it's still good. I mean, you know, it's like pizza, even bad pizza is pizza. So,
right.
All right. So I'm I'm next, and I'm going to put this in the show notes. There was an Indonesian place. My wife heard about them on Facebook, and they think they're based out in LA somewhere, and they come up to Santa Barbara once a week, and they will bring Indonesian food that you order off of their website. So I will put that on the menu. It was pretty good, but it also gave me a chance to shout out the Indonesian food we have in town, which is Sama Sama downtown on State Street. They do a good job. I mean, I wouldn't say like highfalutin, because it's not like this, like, you know, snooty atmosphere. It's a really casual kind of place, but they use really good ingredients, and they do a good job with their food. But the Facebook delivery person is kind of it's more home style, classic kind of Indonesian preparation, but they do like the nasi goreng, mie goreng, and various curries and pancakes and stuff too. So I'll put a link to the Facebook. I think it's SoCal Indo, something like that. My wife, I don't have social media, so I'm kind of limited here. I'm just going second hand off what my wife knows, but also Sama Sama Kitchen in Santa Barbara. And it's nice to highlight kind of like Southeast Asian cuisines that aren't just Thai and now Vietnamese, because Vietnamese seems to be more prominent than it used to be even, but it used to be just Thai food but now Indonesian gets its own, you know, has a little segment, and, you know, Thai, Vietnamese, Cambodian flavors are starting to come out more and more. So it's kind of nice. Gives me a chance to highlight some the little nuances and the differences in the different styles in cooking between, you know, when it was all just Thai, which, you know, I love Thai food as well. So I'm not saying anything about that, but just kind of a little shout out to Sama Sama doing that little different, putting a little spin on things. And
is the Sama Sama doing the outside dining or just delivery?
Yes, they are open for, they had seating outside, and they are still doing takeout. And I'm sure everyone's doing delivery now because of the Grubhub and DoorDash and all that. But yeah, they do have some dine-in available. And have any of you had a chance to go out to State since they've done all the promenade stuff? I haven't been yet, but I'm curious how it is. It looks
probably
cool.
The wrong answer to admit that I've done that, but it's yeah, nice. No. I hope they keep it closed off like that. It really works.
Yeah. And especially because, you know, the businesses, it just feels more vibrant. Like when I drive by and look around and see people walking in the middle of the street, bicyclists, plenty of room for people to maneuver, but it does kind of give a little bit of vibrancy, where like Paseo Nuevo has that, where right around that De La Guerra area where there's a lot of foot traffic. But that, it does seem to have expanded the foot traffic out to the rest of State, which is nice, because they definitely need it.
Yeah, I haven't been. I haven't been. But I think, you know, like similar to Santa Monica, how they kind of shut everything down. I think that's what kind of Santa Barbara needs in some regard, you know, because downtown prior to it, it seemed like it was almost becoming like a ghost town. And you know, I think if we can really, one takeaway from the whole COVID situation is just, you know, relationships and community, longing for that a little bit more since we're so isolated, that hopefully we can return to that place where it really is about that, where it's about being together in you know, blocking certain streets off so people can congregate and hang out and be with each other, you know, and so hopefully they keep it. I've driven obviously past it, but I haven't actually physically walked through it. But I heard it's really a nice place to kind of hang out at. So,
and the new economic development person they got in Santa Barbara, he came from Santa Monica, so I can see where maybe he can have some ideas from there. I mean, Third Street Promenade, it was kind of one of those landmarks growing up for me down in LA. So to kind of recreate that atmosphere of being able to walk through and not worry about vehicle traffic, it's pretty nice. All right, now we're on to the home stretch here, where we're going to talk about just a meaningful piece of culture that has impacted our lives. Jana, do you want to lead us off this week, since last week Rocco brought up the rear? So
sure. So I gave this a lot of thought. It's you know, a cultural topic that means a lot to me right now. And, you know, keep in mind that I have two college-age daughters, so that obviously has an influence on my realm. But I really thought that since music is so pervasive in our society, that I would focus on that, because it seems right now that there are a lot of young pop stars, musicians that are really becoming the voice and the advocates for mental health. And I think that's going to really, going back to that first conversation we had about the stigma and the barriers about becoming part of a program where you have to self-identify, we can get people talking about mental health. We've removed those barriers. So watching the Grammys not long ago with Demi Lovato and hearing her sing her song, Anyone. Have you guys heard that song?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And that live performance, it just pierced my soul, for lack of a better word. It was almost haunting to hear her sing that song. You could feel how vulnerable she was. You could feel that it was very authentic. It was real. And there was this pain and isolation and loneliness in her song. And she's really come out and used her she's used her fame as an opportunity, a platform to really speak about mental health, whether it be bipolar disorder, depression, anxiety. She's a real advocate for getting help, seeking treatment, medication if it's appropriate, self-care. You know, and I think it wasn't long ago where celebrities and musicians really, it was more about fame and fortune. And I think that's really changed, and I'm excited about the change, and it takes courage, but there's so many young people coming out and speaking on behalf of mental health because of their own experience. They're normalizing it. Selena Gomez, Lady Gaga, I mean, the list just goes on. I did actually pull out a couple of lines, you know, well, in that song, Anyone. I mean, Demi Lovato says, nobody's listening to me. I need someone. Lord, please send me anyone. And to me, that's just how astute a person with a mental health condition can feel so isolated. And if they're not able to reach out for help, you know, we lose lives. And this is an opportunity to save lives. And so it means a lot to me. It really made me reflect on just working at City College and DSPS. I mean, I just did our data, and 23% of our students that are registered in DSPS, 23% have a psychological disability or mental health condition. And 2 years ago, 18%. So, I mean, this is the fastest growing, exponentially growing area of need, and it is global. So, I remember in an interview that Demi Lovato did recently, one of her statements that says it all is, I think that it's important that if I use my voice for more than just singing, and I just know how important it is to use my platform to help others and to share my story in hopes that it inspires people to either get into recovery or better themselves. And she's really helped, I think, people see the connection between substance use and mental health conditions and how they coexist. So that's what I want to talk about. I'm really passionate about it, and it gives me so much hope.
And it's nice you mentioned how, I mean, she realizes that as a musician, she has a platform. And if you look at, you know, the way things kind of in the past maybe were before, I mean, definitely were before, and it, what's changing now, is that more musicians, and there are just more musicians and more platforms, more people have had an opportunity to be heard, and more people are able to speak out on their own experiences. We have the diversity of kind of musical choices out there. It's a lot to kind of take in, but at the same time, more folks are getting that platform and able to kind of write songs and sing and speak on things that they're intimate with and know a lot about. And so we're just learning about so many more things. I mean, just knowing, just like pop stars like Demi Lovato and stuff like that, it wasn't, you know, 30, 40 years ago, there weren't that many female pop stars, you know, like mm-hmm. And now you're getting more female representation. You're seeing more non-binary, you're seeing, you know, all LGBTQ voices out there, and just all these musicians and just creative folks with platforms speaking on the issues that are important to them and bringing some of those things out to the forefront is important because, yeah, you know, when I was growing up, it was sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And in the grand scheme of things, not only is that not important, it's detrimental and hurtful to a lot of people around that whole culture. So it was, I mean, we're probably still kind of pulling ourselves out of the rubble of the destruction that was wrought from certain musicians getting a platform when maybe we should have broadened the voices then and had an opportunity for more people to speak. You know, I mean, they used to always have those like women in rock issues of like Rolling Stone, mm-hmm. like you condensed it down to one issue, and you give one platform a year, so to speak. Like, this is our Women in Rock issue for the year. But now it's not like that. Now, I mean, women are dominating rock music. Like, they're like the most inventive rock music that I listen to in terms of guitar based stuff is with bands, you know, with all kinds of representation in the band. Like, if I hear a band of all guys at this point, you really have to do something crazy to impress me, because it's been done and done and done, and mm-hmm. and really kind of going outside the box is not something they're great at, you know. Like, it's not their fault, it's just that they don't have to, you know. Like, it's nothing they're doing wrong. I'm not saying that, like, you know, they're limited, or it's not an issue of better or worse. It's an issue of your surroundings and how your upbringing, all your experiences inform what you're bringing to your platform as a creative person. And I'm just ready to hear about the platforms and voices of more kind of a broader spectrum of the world. And that's what we're getting. And it's really refreshing. So to highlight Demi Lovato, who's made it as a big time pop star playing the Grammys and still able to speak on these really personal issues is like really nice. It just makes me feel good about music today.
Right. Well,
thank you.
I mean, I also want to echo those same sentiments. I think what's super courageous about what she's doing is, I mean, we've all kind of been led to believe that once you make it, you got the stardom, you have the limelight, you got the money, everything is going to be okay. And we know that that's a false narrative. And it's really, I commend her for being vulnerable and taking the initiative to say, hey, look, you know, I'm in this space, and outwardly looking into the situation, I have everything that people would deem as being successful, and I'm still struggling with this. And so what I actually kind of hear in that is, like, it's not the accumulation of wealth or wealth like cars, possessions, that's really important in that. It's more about community, healing, being heard, having someone you can confide in. These are the things that matters the most. And so I think a lot of that gets lost because people are trying to move units or trying to make sales. So I commend her for that. And I want to thank you for sharing that, because that needs to be heard, that just because you acquire more doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be happier. In fact, like, I think it was Biggie who said it, more money, more problems. So yeah, we got to recognize that.
And it's a good point to make, because even as me growing up really poor, you know, as a poor person in LA, I would look around and be like, well, when I get rich, it'll be better. Or I'll look at someone like, well, that's because you're rich, you know. And in hindsight, I see it now. It's not because they were rich. I mean, does it help? Absolutely. Is it an advantage? Yes. But does it buy happiness? Does it lead to contentment? Absolutely not. You know, and it does lead to more problems. A lot of stress just exacerbates us with various, you know, factors, and wealth accumulation definitely is there. So now, I mean, even now I'm not rich, so to speak, but I don't worry about certain things that I worried about when I was a kid. And do I feel happier? Yes. I mean, but am I at the contentment level that I thought I would be at? No, you know, like there's so much work that still has to be done, and so much kind of self-improvement and self-reflection and self-realization, and then along with the community around you. So yeah, that's definitely a salient point right there, Akil. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah.
What do you got for us, Han?
All right, I'm going to piggyback on Jana's pick, and my pick for this week is Phoebe Bridgers. She's a musician from LA. She has a new album called Punisher out. And it's really good. I mean, the intro, I mean, one of the best closing tracks I've heard in recent memory. So just, but the intro is good. The album is good. She played at Soho last year, and I got to see her live, and she puts on a great live show too. So when live shows kick up again, post COVID, be sure to check out your favorite artists. And she was definitely a great live musician. But one of the reasons I chose her is because she put out an album a couple years ago called Stranger of the Alps. And she had a single off that called Motion Sickness. And it was kind of her big hit, quote unquote, you know, so to speak. Turns out that song was about a relationship she had with another musician, Ryan Adams, who is kind of a big deal in the quote unquote indie. And like, turns out he was a lecher. He was a terrible person, you know? So no one knew it at the time that it came out that it was about him, but she came out in interviews after the fact and said it was about him. And it just kind of really kind of pinpointed to me that, you know, with these, with musicians getting more of a platform and speaking out, I mean, we are in a kind of a turning point moment in a lot of ways. And I think music is dealing with that right now. There was a LA record label called Burger Records that recently shut down last week because of some sexual misconduct allegations and things of that sort. And I mean, personally for me, I grew up the first kind of music scene that really roped me in was like the crusty punk scene, you know, like the hardcore punks. And that was a scene built on, I mean, there was some terrible people in there, but at the outer core of it, the one that really roped me in was politics. It was like big picture. Like I really believe that music could change the world, you know, like in now looking back on it, it's pretty naive, but at the time it was really all encompassing. You really did believe that people just needed to hear about these things, mm-hmm. you know? And so, but at the same time, it was a dangerous scene. Like the hardcore music reputation wasn't without, you know, there was a reason that people thought it was kind of dangerous because you see fights all the time. You see people getting like, I saw a guy getting a trash can smashed on his head, people getting jumped. There was an intermingling of all these people, like skinheads and, you know, like skinheads that weren't racist, skinheads that were racist and skate kids and all that. So it was just a lot of things butting heads, but it was very overt. So it was easy to stay out of trouble. If I stayed away from this group, if I stayed away from that group, if I had a couple friends that were with me, then I would be okay. Mm-hmm. So when we transitioned, you know, as I got older and went to college in San Luis, like I mentioned before, and gone beyond and continue to go to live shows, the scene changed. It was still kind of DIY, do it yourself. But the idea of like independent music, you know, became this like indie quote unquote, and then it became emo quote unquote. I mean, I guess now we're so post genre, like everybody mixes everything. These labels don't mean as much as they used to, but back then there were clear delineations. And so as I segued into this quote unquote indie/emo stuff, I was like, oh, this is much more relaxing. You know, like there's no mosh pits. You can sit down in front of the artist and listen to a show. And it seems so kind of like, it was such a breath of fresh air compared to the punk stuff I grew up with. And now looking back on it and hearing all these stories of people coming out about how musicians were harassing people, grooming people, all this stuff, it makes it sicker in a lot of ways, because like I said, at the hardcore shows, it was easy to see who the troublemakers were. It was easy to see and it was also easy to see where the trauma was coming from. You'd go to these people's houses and like, you know, you might have a parent who's addicted to drugs. You might have a parent who's kind of working all the time. There were different factors there, but you could always kind of get a lay of the land, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But with the things that are, the stories that are coming out about the music scene of around the turn of the century, the quote unquote indie stuff, it's so much more insidious because it's all secretive. It's all like, you know, there's this outer facade, and then behind the scenes, there's all this lechery going on. And I mean, I wasn't cool enough to get into any of those inner circles, which, you know, blessing in disguise, but at the same time, yeah. So, but knowing that, it just makes it so much worse. You know, like when you weigh things out, these kinds of trauma, I mean, I think people knew, but we have learned a lot about how trauma begets trauma. And, you know, like things are self-perpetuating. The destruction that you are wreaking on people's lives, on everything, it's like, it's just terrible. I mean, it really made me think, like, in hindsight, this is way worse, because these are traumas that people had to carry invisibly behind the scenes for so long. You know, the people were afraid to speak out. People that wanted to speak out felt powerless to do so. I mean, if I was getting a trash can smashed on my head, at least I could deal with it in the moment. You know, like I could tell somebody, did you see them smash the trash can on my head? It's pretty obvious that happened. But these are stories that, I mean, people are getting gaslit. You're telling people someone a story and they don't believe you. I mean, this is heartbreaking. It's just so terrible, especially coming, you know, going from punk to like something like indie and emo, which is mellower and more focused on the individual. Like when I brought the politics up, because you knew the music couldn't change. Like it wasn't going to overthrow the democratic, you know, like, or the, you know, the capitalistic stronghold that we kind of, that's not going to happen. But you at least thought with the independent and the emo music that you could become a better person, like an individual. You know, and really kind of reach kind of the emotive core of yourself. And to see that a lot of these artists who were kind of inspiring me to be a better person were also terrorizing other people and making them absolutely just shells of themselves because of selfishness. It just really hurts. Because like that was the thing about the punk scene that was so important, was the genuineness. Like you may have nothing, but at least you stand for what you believe in and you're actually forthright with that. But to all this, like behind the scenes, like million things to million people, you know, like it's absolutely the fakest thing, the biggest example of being a poser that I could think of, you know, like it's really rough. I mean, yeah, it's just thinking about it now makes me kind of angry And I wish, I really wish, I wish I could have done more, but I didn't know. And even the people that did know felt powerless at the same time. So it's tough because, I mean, I guess, you know, like the music really moved me to be a better person and be a better, like, you know, to express myself, you know, itself romantically and like in that respect better. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, like in your early to mid 20s, like, you know, relationships and things like that, they have a heightened importance, you know. Now I can look back and be like, oh, just had to wait a little bit, you know, but in the moment, everything's like life or death and you're thrashing around. It's like that late high school, early college scene. It's like, it's really thick, you know? And it's like, I remember telling my wife specifically, like, oh, just test me, you know, like that idea of this test me relationship. That's the thing I was kind of getting at, is like, the test me relationship is like it's like a break in case of emergency. It's not to be used lightly, you know? And so to see like these artists kind of, they were throwing around the test me and then going around and being treacherous and like hurting people. Like you can't do that. You know, it's a total betrayal. Like the test me was so important to me. And in hindsight, they were throwing it around. Like that was what they were doing to groom people. They would like meet on the internet, be like, test me. I'll be the man that changes your life, and just destroying their lives. Like, oh, it's infuriating. It's hard to put into words, but just listen to Phoebe Bridgers and her new album. And just a lot of it is just little mundane observations about her life on tour and just being a person growing up, which is really nice. I mean, and she has some poignant moments too, some little heartfelt touches, like songs about romance and stuff like that. Like, it's a good album that like a voice of someone growing up right now, and just how nice it is, like I said, to give people those platforms, just speak their truth. Just let someone speak their truth and just look at it that way. No more putting people on pedestals, no more pulling all this meaning out and thinking it's one way when it ends up being a totally insidious, terrible other way. Like these new artists that are coming out and these musicians are just honest, and it's really refreshing. And they're trying their best to be honest and consistent throughout, where, you know, like there's no secret green room shenanigans going on. If they say that there's, you know, not doing drugs or drinking, then they're actually not, you know, like it's kind of nice. Yeah. It's really nice actually, because a lot of times, you know, in those days, I felt like I had to, you know, pull my weight to fit in. Like if there's a show going on, like I had like chug 3 340s before I go in to show that like, I'm not like the other nerdy Asian guys. Like I really am cool. You know, like I'm cool. Like, you know, so much unnecessary like culture. Like, you know, like, yeah, it's.
Well, you are cool, hon. You're definitely.
No. I'm happy to be uncool, but I know about cool things. Like that's the thing. That's like when we talk about food, I tell everyone, I like to eat at a lot of places, but I have no taste. You know, like I'll go to McDonald's right now and eat 3 cheeseburgers and not even think twice about it. Like I have no taste. Just like with musical stuff, I know a lot about cool things, but if you see me at the show, you know I'm not with the in crowd. I'm absolutely the least cool person there, but I do know how to have a good time. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Well, for my piece, I'm actually going to, I picked a TV show, over this past weekend. My wife and I, we binge watched a show on, Showtime. It's called The Chi. And man, I think I started last Friday. We started last Friday and we were caught up by the weekend. They're currently in airing. It's 3 seasons. It's a drama, and the author, the producer, creator, her name is Lena Waithe, I believe is how you pronounce her last name. Mm-hmm. And it's a great story. It's so funny how it ties in to a lot of the things that we were discussing today, but it basically takes place in Chicago, hence the name The Chi. And it's a really intricate story woven between like maybe I think about 6 or 7 different characters. And she does an amazing job at bringing out social issues. Today, like we were discussing about mental health, and there's a few episodes just dedicated to that, where one of the kids had witnessed a tragic event, and they were talking to him about like, you're going to need counseling. And for a lot of Black people, he happens to be Black, but for a lot of Black people, there's a whole discussion around that about counseling and what that looks like. And if you go, you're less of a man if you're a boy, or we don't do that in this house. But then she talks about a whole slew of different issues like gentrification, crime, PTSD. She talks about faith. She talks about redemption. One of the main characters is a Vietnam vet, and he goes through the struggles of being looked down upon by the people in the community, from returning back from the war because he was dealing with, you know, PTSD. But then there's redemption in his character, and you see kind of like what he's battling. And she just does a remarkable job at tackling things that are relevant. I think it airs on Showtime on Sunday nights. I can't speak enough about how she just does an amazing job. She actually was the first Black woman to win a Primetime Emmy Award for Outstanding Writing for a comedy. She had a series prior to The Chi called Master of None, and it was from 2015 to 2017. And just like, it's really great to see that the cast and people that she cast in her roles are people of color, so you can see people's, you can relate to people that have maybe, who may grow up in a different environment from you, because obviously Chicago, inner city, but the similarities of someone who's growing up in the suburbs can still relate to that, because they're like, you know, you can see yourself in the characters, and it's great.
I'm so excited. I have not heard of that show. I'm on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I saw Master of None, so I saw the couple of episodes that she wrote, and she was really good. She starred in it as well.
Yeah,
so I was looking for The Chi, but Showtime is my like one streaming gap. Like, I have HBO, I have Disney, I have Netflix, I have Hulu. I need to get access to Showtime somehow. Mm-hmm. So I'll need
to... You know, I had seen it for a while, and I just was like, oh, I don't know. And then I was looking for something, and it's just very well written. What good thing is they follow these three kids that are. This starts off with, there's a tragic event, someone's killed, and then all the characters are all intermingled. And then they have these three high school, they start off in junior high. Now they're in high school because we're in season three. But the writing for them is so spot on. There's a character, his name is Papa. And man, if I could just, every time I see him, I'm like, man, that's exactly how I was when I was in high school. So I see myself in him and his character. And so that's my plug. That's my piece. It's definitely worth checking out. Give it a few episodes. It's a little bit slow at the beginning, but it gets really good.
And that's a good point to raise, is that, you know, in terms of the environments may be different, inner city Chicago versus, you know, Santa Barbara, whatever, but the universality of humanity, you know, like, we're all individuals, so we're all different, but at the same time, there are so many common threads that we all, you know.
Absolutely. And we have to honestly, like, I think this is a part of it is being able to see ourselves and other people in different circumstances, you know. And, you know, I just think that, you know, by simply reducing it down to a black and white issue is never a good thing, you know. We need to try to find more humanity in each other, see ourselves in each other a whole lot more. For us just to move forward to a better place, I really believe in that.
Nice.
Yes.
A salient point again. nothing but gems from Akil today. Uh-huh. yes. Well, that brings us to the close of another episode of Vaquero Voices. Thank you, Jana, so much for coming on.
Yes, thank you so much, Jana.
Hey, can I make a quick plug for something?
Of course.
Absolutely.
Oh, thank you. I want just to let those listening know that we are going to be co-sponsoring our second annual Movies for Mental Health event. So Becky Bean and The Well and myself are working together. It's going to be on Wednesday, September 16th at 4 p.m. We're obviously remote, and we'll be doing a lot of promoting and advertising throughout the school. But essentially, Movies for Mental Health is... there's a nonprofit called Art with Impact, And their whole mission is to create space for people to talk about their mental health. And their tagline is, everyone has a mental health story and talking about it should not be taboo. And the way it works, it's a very simple concept, is we show very short student-made films, and we very carefully select those films from their inventory or their archives, and it starts a dialogue. So it's very interactive, so the people that participate will be interacting about what they saw and what it, how it worked for them or resonated with them. And then we have mental health professionals participating to provide appropriate support, as well as a professional panel to also share about resources in our community. So we're excited about that, and just keep your eyes open, and we'll send out as much info as we can.
Is there a place to go for more info right now, like a website or anything, or is it just gonna come out over email?
It's gonna come out really soon. We just finished the marketing package, so we'll be using all the platforms, the social media platforms that the college offers as well. But you could probably, I think even if you go to the Well website, it's probably up right about now as well.
Excellent. I'll see if I can find anything and put something in the show notes as well.
Thank you.
Sounds like a great event. Yeah. Second annual, you said?
So second
annual. We did it last fall. We had a great turnout. It was well received.
Yeah. All right. Sounds good. September 16th at 4:00.
And,
Movies for Mental Health.
Yeah. Everybody does have a mental health story, whether personally or someone you know or someone. I mean, there's these kind of traumas and things of sorts they're all around us. So it's just kind of good chance to reflect and kind of talk about things. That's a great event.
Well, thanks again. It's been a pleasure.
A lot of fun.
See you guys later.
Thank you all very much.
All right, thank you.
And yes, take care until next time.
Bye. Yeah.